Hello and welcome to the South Carolina Lead. You trust the lead to keep you up to date on important state news, and we've been doing that more often as our state faces the COVID-19 virus. I'm your host, Gavin Jackson, and this episode was recorded on August 3rd, 2020, from my home in Columbia. Just so you know, some of the information in this podcast may have changed by the time you've heard it. This podcast cuts through the noise and gives you South Carolina-specific COVID-19 news and stories. This episode features remarks from Senator Lindsey Graham about his plans for broadband expansion, election security, and a sentence I never thought I'd say, but the future of TikTok, and more. We hear about what digital tools small businesses are using to navigate the pandemic. We hear comments from Dr. Anthony Fauci before Congressman Jim Clyburn's coronavirus committee, and new mask mandates, also the latest data from DHEC. Additionally, we want to hear your stories, so we set up a voicemail box to hear from you all about your daily life in these uncertain times. Leave us a 1 to 3 minute long voicemail at 803-563-7169. Tell us your name, where you're calling from, and what's going on in your world. Tell us your thoughts about TikTok. We are maybe interested. Also about COVID-19 and your experiences. We're all interested about that for sure. So again, let us know what's going on with you at 803-563-7169. Now for the latest in South Carolina. Currently, the spread of COVID-19 is ongoing, widespread, and not contained, according to Department of Health and Environmental Control officials. There have been 1,721 deaths, and currently there are 92,404 cases being reported in all 46 counties as of August 3rd at 4 p.m. The recent percent positive rate was 15.2%, and the number of COVID-19 patients hospitalized stands at 1,401, with 366 of those in ICU and 224 being ventilated. DHEC is also working with the South Carolina Hospital Association to create a new process for gathering inpatient bed availability and occupancy from each hospital in the state, as this is the reporting metric that best provides the number of hospital beds available for caring for adult COVID-19 patients. Expect a more defined reporting system in place in the coming days. Also, on August 3rd, we had our lowest daily new case rate since July 7th at 1,105, and we also had our lowest daily death rate at 11. That's the lowest since July 20th. Additional positive news is our 7-day moving average of cases has decreased from a July 17th high of 1,949 to 1,513 as of August 3rd. Now, our 7-day average for deaths has also declined from a July 28th high of 49 to 41 as of August 3rd. Senator Lindsey Graham was in Columbia on Monday to discuss his plan with Senator Tim Scott to introduce a bill that would put forth $10 billion for broadband infrastructure. But we also heard his thoughts on a variety of news topics, including ongoing Senate stimulus negotiations, election concerns, and his recent PhD in TikTok, and what he told the president about a potential sale of the company. But let's start off with his broadband plan. He was at the University of South Carolina School of Medicine, and Prisma Health was also there to discuss his broadband initiative that would help get 700,000 South Carolinians broadband access.
If you don't have broadband, in many ways, you're just as much in the dark in the 21st century if you had no electricity in your house. So here's my goal, is to get some money in the next stimulus package, and I believe we'll have a breakthrough that will expedite the delivery of broadband access to rural America and urban areas that are basically dark. The FCC standard of 25.3 high-speed internet access, their national standard, there are about over 700,000 South Carolinians unable to access that technology. This $10 billion block grant will go to every state, a minimum of $75 million to each state. The rest of the money is distributed based on population. We anticipate that South Carolina would have about $170 million to build out broadband for rural areas and those urban areas that have dark spots where really there is no access to the internet in a meaningful way. We're trying to lower the cost. There are a lot of people on fixed incomes, low-income South Carolinians that couldn't afford the broadband cost. So we're going to try to create some money so providers can have subsidies for low-income South Carolinians. This, to me, is an absolute medical essential requirement to have broadband throughout the country, to expand on telemedicine. The benefits of this technology are just endless. And when it comes to schools and distance learning, you need it there just as much as you do on the health side.
He mentioned that he has been working with Congressman Jim Clyburn's office on this as well. Clyburn has been one of the biggest advocates of broadband expansion and has put forth his own plan. Graham, who is the chairman of the Senate Judiciary Committee, said he's been talking with the White House about the floundering negotiations on the Senate stimulus bill, and a breakthrough is close, he said.
I talked to Secretary Mnuchin last night. I talked to the president. I expect a breakthrough because one's needed. Usually politicians respond to need, and there's a real need out there. If you're unemployed still because of the coronavirus, I'm okay with a federal supplement to state benefits. I just don't want you to get paid more not to work than to work. So I support continuing a federal supplement to state unemployment benefits, but it can't be at $600 because we've skewed the labor market. There's help wanted signs all over where I live, and under the current construct, you're making $47,000 a year in unemployment. There are school teachers who don't make that in South Carolina. So I want to replace your wages up to 100% of what you were making, but not pay people more in unemployment than they were making at their job site. So we're going to have to reconfigure that. There has to be some liability protection. If you're going to open your business back up and you follow the guidelines, you shouldn't be sued. So there's some negotiations to be had. But to me, reshaping the unemployment benefit to continue to help people but not pay more in unemployment than you made when you were working is very important to me.
Graham weighed in on President Donald Trump's July 30th tweet, in which the president said, with universal mail-in voting, not absentee voting, which is good, 2020 will be the most inaccurate and fraudulent election in history. It will be a great embarrassment to the USA. Delay the election until people can properly, securely, and safely vote. ? Now here's what Senator Graham had to say about that.
Well, the election will not be delayed. We've had elections through wars and every other disaster known to man. We're going to vote on November the 3rd. The one thing I do oppose is mail-in voting as the exclusive way to vote. There are efforts by Democrats to basically create a national mail-in ballot voting standard. Absentee voting is different. You can apply for an absentee ballot. It's got a lot more controls. You can vote early in our state so you don't have to be around large crowds. I'm all for convenient voting, but this idea of just mailing out hundreds of millions of ballots, assuming they go to the right address and no chicanery, I'm against that.
Now, for all you hip TikTokers out there, I think that's the nomenclature, who have been following with bated breath the future of the Chinese-owned company, Graham said he told the president not to ban TikTok, but for it to stay in American hands and give Microsoft a chance to buy it and let it keep running.
I'm not a user of TikTok. I don't meet the profile of your average TikTok user, but I've come to look at some of the content. Now I know why people like TikTok, is there's a lot of good stuff out there on TikTok. So the Chinese company that owns TikTok, the fear is that they're going to give access to the data to the Chinese Communist Party, because in China, there's no such thing as private business. Everybody answers to the government. There's no separation in China like there is here. And our national security experts are very concerned that all the data that TikTok is collecting can be dumped into the Chinese Communist Party hands, and that will be bad for the American consumer and our national security. Having said that, it became apparent to me from everybody that I know that has a teenage kid or somebody in college wanted to let me know about TikTok. Because when President Trump said he was going to shut down the site, all hell broke loose. So I got a PhD in TikTok in about an hour. And I called the president. I said, Mr. President, you're right to want to shut this site down in terms of how communist China can manipulate the data. The site needs to stay up in American hands. Microsoft is interested in buying TikTok. I talked to their general counsel three times last night. They're very interested in doing it in a way to protect the privacy of American data, to have it all housed in the United States. And I think a win-win would be to kick China out, put it in the hands of Microsoft, secure the data, and keep the site up and running. And I think that's where we're headed.
And just a note, we'll be hearing a lot more about broadband in Thursday's pod, since the Joint Bond Review Committee will be meeting Tuesday to discuss the $50 million in CARES Act money that was set aside for broadband expansion in the state. Now, hotspots will be going to 100,000 households in the state at this point, so again, there's a lot in action when it comes to broadband in South Carolina. Now, this section will probably take less than a TikTok, but South Carolina Supreme Court Chief Justice Donald Beatty issued an order requiring all persons employed in, conducting business in, or otherwise visiting or present for any reason in a county and municipal courthouse statewide to wear a protective mask or other facial covering while inside the courthouse. Those people will also have their temperature taken when entering the courthouse as well. Now, there are some exceptions to the mask requirement, including during courtroom proceedings, when the judge may require the removal of masks for a brief period of time for the fair presentation of the case. In such instances, social distancing should be observed. Now, clerk of courts and presiding judges are also empowered to limit the number of non-litigants allowed inside courthouses. Any person who refuses to comply with these directives is subject to contempt for violation of this order. The Attorney General's office said Friday that Beatty does have the authority to institute the ordinance, according to the Post and Courier. And face masks will also be required in schools statewide, according to the South Carolina Department of Education. This is in addition to masks being required by everyone on state school buses. One in three small businesses would have had to close all or part of their businesses if they had not had any digital tools as part of their business model during the pandemic. Those empowered by digital tools were 4.5 times more likely to project revenue gains. This according to Jake Ward, who's the president of the Connected Commerce Council in Charleston. He recently spoke with Mike Switzer of the South Carolina Business Review about how small businesses are staying afloat with these tools.
Well, first of all, give us a little more information about the council. How long has it been around and what it is that you guys do?
The Connected Commerce Council, or as we frequently refer to it, 3C, is a relatively young organization. We began with the mission of helping small businesses have better access to digital tools and services and materials that would empower them and help them run their businesses. Increasingly, in the age of COVID, our mission has evolved to provide direct support to small businesses in the form of advocacy at a state and federal level, but also connecting small businesses with funding programs, state, federal, private grants and loan programs throughout the country that are helping small businesses weather the storm and get from today to tomorrow.
And now tell us more about this study that you guys recently conducted. Was this done very recently or right after the pandemic hit the small business community in March?
3C partnered with Google in early May to release a survey and ultimately a report on some of the indicators of resilience and potential success, as well as some of the threats that small businesses were facing as a result of COVID-19. And the social distance restrictions and quarantines that we were all sort of living through then and seem to be poised to be living through for several more months. Specifically, we were looking for any lessons that we could learn about the role of online tools and services and some of the best practices around taking brick and mortar stores and putting them online, or finding ways to run our small businesses with social distancing restrictions, in hopes that at some point, relatively soon, we'll be able to give best practices on the road to recovery.
Were you able to identify the digital tools that provided the highest chance for success for these companies?
The type of tools that provide the most value depends on the type of business that's using them. For a retail brick and mortar store, digital advertising, certainly, customer relationship management software, certainly, but mostly you're talking about e-commerce, right? The ability to continue to sell goods through an online portal in the same way that you did at a brick and mortar store. For a restaurant, it's a different animal entirely. You're talking about logistics, you're talking about CRMs and advertising. What we did find, however, is that for those small businesses that were more digitally empowered, the more likely they were to be able to sustain during the initial months of the COVID-19 crisis.
Now, were there any surprises in this study? Were there a lot of companies, for example, that had not even considered using e-commerce, but certainly could have easily enough?
There were two remarkable findings. One is that nearly 75% of small businesses surveyed were optimistic that once we're on the other side of the COVID-19 crisis, business will return to normal. And that level of optimism isn't particularly surprising to us at 3C, because we work with small businesses every day. We understand that optimism and resolve is part of what makes a good and successful small business owner and operator. But it was heartening to see. The other thing that we saw that was remarkable is that the transition from periodic users of technology or even regular users but not core to their business model, that transition to more intense use of digital tools and services, whether it be online commerce or advertising, digital marketing, those types of platform uses, Instagram advertising, for example, was something that some small businesses did some of the time. But in the age of COVID, they were increasing the buys. They were doing it with more intensity and focus. They're not going back. They are eager to maintain that level of digital empowerment through the crisis and on the other side of the crisis, which says to us that is a level of digital transition that we've been talking about for 10 years and we've seen in the last 3 months.
Thanks for that, Mike. And looking at the retail landscape, Lord & Taylor, the department store that traces its roots back to 1826 and the clothing rental startup that bought it last year for $100 million, has declared Chapter 11 bankruptcy, according to the New York Times. The company was struggling before the pandemic, and Lord & Taylor becomes the latest retailer to see its demise exacerbated by COVID-19. Other stores such as Neiman Marcus, Brooks Brothers, J. Crew, JCPenney, and Ann Taylor have filed for Chapter 11 to restructure their debt. Dr. Anthony Fauci testified before Congressman Jim Clyburn's House Select Subcommittee on the coronavirus crisis on July 31st. Committee members asked about the U.S. response to the pandemic and what the national strategy was moving forward. There was also important testimony about the latest on vaccine development.
This past Monday, the 27th, to beginning in a Phase 3 trial. It's a trial that will go over several months involving 30,000 individuals. We hope that as the time we get into the late fall and early winter, we will have, in fact, a vaccine that we can say would be safe and effective. One can never guarantee the safety or effectiveness unless you do the trial, but we are cautiously optimistic that this will be successful because in the early studies in human, the phase one study, it clearly showed that individuals who were vaccinated mounted a neutralizing antibody response that was at least comparable and in many respects better than what we see in convalescent serum from individuals who have recovered from COVID-19.
In response to a question about the slow development of an HIV vaccine versus one for COVID-19, Fauci said the two are completely different. And even with the speed in which COVID vaccines are being developed, it is realistic to have an effective and safe one very soon.
I think the difference between HIV and coronavirus is so different that I don't think you can compare them, because the body does not make a very good immune response against HIV, so it would make vaccine development very difficult, whereas the body does make a robust immune response against coronavirus, which tells us that I believe that we can get to that goal. I know to some people this seems like it is so fast that there might be compromising of safety and in scientific integrity, and I can tell you that is absolutely not the case. The rapidity with which we're doing it is as a result of very different technologies in getting from the time we recognized this pathogen in the beginning of January to the time we were able to get into a phase one trial, to the time we were able to do phase two, and then, as I mentioned, just this past Monday, we started a phase three. That was not reckless rushing. That was technology and doing things in a way that does not compromise any of the steps. So I believe that it is realistic, as I mentioned in my opening statement, that the early data from the phase one trial shows that this candidate, and I'm sure other candidates will do it also. This is not the only vaccine. There are more than one. There are about a dozen, five or six that the federal government is actively involved with, is going into phase three trials over the next few months, as I mentioned, one of which is already in. The response that was induced was really quite favorable. And as I've said often, and I'll repeat it for the record now, there's never a guarantee that you're going to get a safe and effective vaccine. But from everything we've seen now in the animal data, as well as the early human data, we feel cautiously optimistic that we will have a vaccine by the end of this year and as we go into 2021. So I don't think it's dreaming, Congresswoman. I believe it's a reality and will be shown to be a reality.
And here's some interesting polling data from Gallup on schools. In late May and early June, a majority of 56% of K-12 parents wanted full-time in-person school this fall. Now, 36% prefer this option. Meanwhile, 28% of parents, up from 7% in the prior survey, prefer full-time remote instruction. The remaining 36% favor a hybrid system of part in-person teaching and part distance learning. So let us know what you prefer by leaving us a voicemail at 803-563-7169 and tell us your plans for school this fall. I know we have some young listeners out there, so let us know. We want to hear from you guys what you guys think about this and, of course, TikTok. Now, this is our wind-down section where we want to hear from you. Tell us what's happening in your world. Are you going to school this fall? Are you going to work right now? Are you unemployed? What are your thoughts about the federal money for unemployment running out? Are you on the front lines of this pandemic? We want to hear from you. We're very interested in knowing what's going on in your world. So tell us at 803-563-7169. Again, just leave us your name, where you're calling from, and what's happening. And keep your message to under 3 minutes, guys, because you will get cut off. So that being said, AT, do we have anything in our voicemail?
We have one in here, and you've been asking for young people, and this person is a young person. Wow. I don't know how they heard about us. Because
yeah, that's, whoa, it must be TikTok. They can hear us before, I think.
I don't know. No one understands TikTok, at least not either one of us. But well, let's roll the dang old TikTok and tape.
Yeah, roll the TikTok for us.
Hello, NPR. My name is Philip Post. I'm a rising senior in high school, and I am calling from Clemson, South Carolina, where I've been since March, locked inside of my house. It's been a really interesting process since I didn't know what was going to happen in school. And of course, very anxious since it's my last year of high school, and I'm currently in the process of applying to colleges, and I'm right about to complete my last requirements for Eagle Scout rank. It's very interesting because my school district actually said we're having in-person classes and masks are only optional, except for teachers. I was immediately alarmed by this because when you tell high schoolers that something is optional, they're probably not going to do it. And as a result, I actually started a petition petitioning the superintendent to change this policy in Pickens County Schools. And within a week, they had changed their policy to now require a mask, which I am very thankful for. I'm still a bit uneasy about returning to high school. Most of my classes are not offered through any online options, so don't really have much of a choice, just have to mask up and hope for the best. And also, if you want to talk to a high schooler about the whole process, well, you have one right here. Thank you so much for all you guys do. It's been lovely listening to everyone else call in. And I finally mustered up the courage to call in myself as a 17-year-old NPR listener and an NPR listener for life. Thank you so much. Also a first-time caller.
Well, Philip, that was great. We were asking for people to talk to us, and here we got one, a senior from up in Clemson, high school senior up in Clemson. That's great. Awesome to hear about your work there, getting a petition going and having a mask requirement in schools. Luckily, the superintendent of education had you covered there on that one, too. So, yeah, mask up and hope for the best. That's something to think about there for sure. And love that you're also a hardcore NPR listener and one for life already at such a young age at 17. So that's awesome. Tell your friends.
Please.
No, last week we were talking about Isaias, America's favorite pronounced storm.
Last week we were you and I were making fun of the least favorite name.
And now
storm,
I enjoy saying Isaias.
You've
now.
Warmed up.
Yeah, I'm very into it. It rolls off the tongue. That's like me with everything. I used to hate Kindles, and then I got one. I used to hate iPads.
Mean, brag.
Now I have one.
Brag.
I mean, it's like
brag.
AirPods.
Brag.
Ugh, no, I have them. Like, it's
brag.
This is my cycle. I don't know what that's called, but that's my process, folks.
It's called being a jerk.
But no, I'm just hardcore. I fear change.
You want Isaias to stay forever.
Now I want it to stay forever. But so we were talking about the storm names, right? So I know a lot of, everyone always talks about it, where the storm names come from. Every time we got hurricane season going on.
You got great hard facts on this.
Some hardcore facts from Noah. Again, there's no Gavin storm coming up. So not that I really care, because I don't want to be associated with destruction and all that great stuff.
You care a lot. I can tell.
But it's interesting, the reason why there's not a Gavin storm coming up, and maybe some other names are sticking around, is because these forecasters use the same six lists of names over and over. They get recycled every 6 years. So the 2019 list will be used in 2025, et cetera. The only time they change these names, if there's a really bad storm, you know, like Katrina, Sandy, and the like, they get retired, so then a new name gets picked up. So just so you know, so if you're wondering like when your name might become a storm or something like that, that's how it happens. You know,
if you're vain enough like Gavin to want,
oh, you know, everyone looks through those lists and like, so when's Gavin gonna be up there? Okay, Hurricane Andrew got retired in 1992 there.
Yeah, thank you.
You don't even have a chance to be vain about it. This also goes hand in hand with all these stupid memes coming out, you know, like everyone's name on like, you know, the SpongeBob meme or something like that.
I don't understand that, and I'm a dank memologist. Oh. I think it's because the it is not dank. That's not a dank.
People just want to feel something meme. Involved. I honest to God, I don't think I said this before, but
people just want to feel anything.
I just want to feel alive. I reached out to the Schitt's Creek one. Which Schitt's Creek character are you? And I said, can you guys do a Gavin one? And they did one for me. I was very excited about it. It was very accurate. They used David, so it was very spot on. That being said, did you have something to say to our horticulturist?
Oh, yes. I was speaking with our lead horticulturalist, and I have to issue a retraction.
Who's the jerk now?
I wrongfully charged her with stealing my copy of Dune, and
unbelievable.
She told me that I was wrong. Mm. She told me I was wrong.
Yeah.
She has my copy of The Hike by Drew McGarry, but not Dune. And so that's on me. That's on me, Brenton, and I'm sorry. I am falling on my sword.
Shame
on me. Shame. I apologize, okay?
Well, you know, giving books, that's always a tricky thing. I'm interested to hear other people's stories about, you know, giving books that never get
what
returned.
I take a picture of the person holding what I lend them. And so in my phone, it'll tell you like,
and then I trace
a year,
them.
A year later, it'll pop up like this day a year ago. And if I don't have that book back, I'm going to drag you on a podcast.
I'm going to go ahead and say it. Meg Kennard has my copy of Gibbs Knotts' book about the primaries still. Meg,
you know what?
I know
I'm
going to
say it. You know what?
I know
I'm
going
to say it.
I'm not mad. I don't need it. Primaries are over. I'll give it to you in 4 years. Yeah. I've been, again, really going through the books, just zooming through.
Great. I'm so happy for you. You know what I've been doing? I've been doing
more
since
yoga.
Since so much more yoga. I'm a very limber man. But no, since we've been talking about the Bagel Bites defense, pizza in the morning, pizza in the evening, pizza at supper time.
Anytime.
Pizza on the bagel. You can have pizza able anytime.
Your
we
honor,
all know that.
Your
I mean,
honor.
That is settled law.
Yeah.
But ever since then, my wife, Caitlin, and I, we've had a lot of time on our hands. You know, we're not going out and stuff like that. So we got back into eating frozen pizzas.
But you've been making so many good pizzas. Tell me why you're doing the frozen.
Just because I wanted to just, again, feel anything. So I've been filling myself with childhood nostalgia. And we've got a pretty good ranking. So, Gavin, I was going to ask you, like, what's your favorite frozen
pizza?
You
know, honestly, I don't have pizza that often. So if I'm doing pizza, like either someone made it or I'm buying it. I'm ordering it. I haven't bought
what
frozen pizza.
Is not having pizza that much. You always have a sack of
yeah,
Totino's.
So that's different. So I know we're talking about the shape. It's kind of going back to the burger versus hot dog versus sandwich debate. I don't view pizza bites as pizza.
But
formal,
you keep that thing on you.
But I keep
but
them.
You, keep
yeah,
that
get, you know,
thing
you go to Costco, you get the big like pack of them for $10. Because if you have friends over, turns into a party. Oh God, I have nothing to eat. Oh wait a minute, pizza bites. Pizza bites are always there.
Still
and
never
people
had one.
And people crave them. Well, you can do it. You can do your ranking of your pizzas, and I can introduce you to the wonderful world of miniature pizzas.
I go full nostalgia. I'm a Red Baron man.
Huh? Is that your number? So this is your number one frozen pizza?
My number one is Red Baron. It's gross, but it doesn't taste like pizza, but I like it. It tastes like school lunch.
Not delivery. I mean, DiGiorno.
I do not like DiGiorno. DiGiorno is not good. You're so funny. You're funny.
So what about the fancier stuff? Like, you know, the things you can get from like Trader Joe's or like the California Pizza Kitchen frozen pizzas.
I hate California Pizza Kitchen. California Pizza Kitchen is an abomination. I'm gonna go out on a limb right here and just say that Buffalo Chicken Pizza is a disaster. Mm. I mean, you are a monster. I don't want to put ranch on my pizza. You know, that's not my deal. I don't need ranch on pizza.
I know Kaylin Park's not listening, in Jersey. But she would not agree. No,
she's our friend, but not that good of a friend.
Any other frozen pizzas that we need to be aware of?
Caitlin likes freschetta. I just got called Table 87 that looks like a margarita pizza.
Mm-hmm.
So it looks pretty good. I'm surprised. So I'll leave it at that. Call in. Tell us what frozen pizzas you like. Are you an Elio's person?
Oh, yeah.
Are you a monster?
Oh, well, I haven't had Elio's.
That doesn't like crust?
Or the Mama Celeste, right. You know, Mama Celeste pizza.
Celeste is gross.
That reminds me of my childhood. Bad. Well, every Those frozen pizza is trash.
One of my friends said their favorite is Hot Pockets.
Again, that's not pizza. It is a pizza in a different form. Just like a hot dog is a hot dog, not a sandwich.
You're claiming calzone law here.
Oh, yeah. I mean, that transcends everything right there. Yeah, let us know what you're eating, what you're doing, thoughts about just how everything's going on right now. We want to know. 803-563-7169. And again, thank you for listening to the pod. Show us your appreciation by leaving us a voicemail or a review on iTunes. We'd love that. And you can stay up to date with the latest news on scetv.org and southcarolinapublicradio.org. And don't forget to support your local newspapers. Also, consider becoming a member of the ETV Endowment. Membership starts at just $40, and if you pledge at the $75 level, you get access to PBS Passport and all the great programming your donation helps support. So again, if you're done reading, if you're done Netflix, check out PBS Passport by becoming a member. For the South Carolina Lead, I'm Gavin Jackson. Be well, South Carolina. It's awesome. My parents don't even care. I don't even know about my parents.
I've been emancipated.
I'm what I call a TikTok orphan.